Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
James Verlap from DenverFan.com. Chad Brown, who just beat the buzzer. Brandon Stokely.
I mean, that's a replay. We got to go to replay on that, like in the NBA, see if the horn went off or not. It's close. I mean, it's close, Chad. I don't know, man. We need to go to replay here.
It was as close as possible. Like, the red light was going on around the backboard there, right as the ball left the fingertips.
Wow.
I was all ready to argue with you, Stoke. I argued with Chad yesterday.
I know. I heard some of it.
It took him 2 minutes, I think, yesterday to tell me essentially that I was a moron, which is the new record. So that's good.
Yeah. I wanted to do that a bunch over the last few days, James.
Well, I will be back. I'm on with you guys at 1:45. So I'll be back and we can argue about it then. But Chad is here. I'm going to turn it over to you two guys. And then I will be back.
You're gonna be back. You're coming
hours.
Back.
Oh,
don't run.
Oh no.
I mean, don't all of a sudden, you know, like, oh, something came up. I can't get back because we got a lot of discussions.
I'm ready for you.
Happen here.
I've been taking mental notes. I'm ready.
You're gonna dive into him and all his conspiracy theories and nefarious motives and all that.
Chad, I can't. You know, it just, like, I'm losing my hair to begin with. You know, here it's getting thinned out here, and when I you know, Marilette's making me pull the rest of it out. You know, listen to yesterday, looking at his Twitter feed. You know, he's saying that if it's not Drew, then the whole thing's a sham. And I with my two eyes, and I want to get your opinion here, because what I love about this, Chad, is you were at the game. You called the game. And by the way, great job on the call.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
You were there. Like, you know, so, like, I think if anybody has a perspective of it. Now, did you talk to Vic and do you get to talk to the coaches at all beforehand? How does that work for y'all?
Yeah, so there was a Zoom call with both coordinators, Ed Donatell and Pat Shurmur. Then we had a chance to talk to Garrett Bowles and Bradley Chubb on the Zoom call. And then Friday afternoon, we had a chance to talk to Vic Fangio as well. So I got a good sense of how they're talking about it within the organization. And to push back on James, what James is saying and how they're talking about it, those two don't match up very well.
They don't match up.
Yeah.
From your perspective, I heard some of the show yesterday. I was in and out of the car. Where do you see this thing at right now?
I think Teddy has the lead. And I think the consistency, the steadiness, I mean, how can you argue with 7-for-8 and 9-for-11? And they should have been 10-for-11 because one of those passes was dropped on Saturday night. How can you argue with that? I know those folks are trying to talk about the going forward on fourth down, and Teddy's got no control over that. All he can control is when he's on the field, what does he do? And he did what a quarterback should do. Steady, consistent, calm, composed. Even had Vic Fangio going with a Tom Brady-esque comparison, talking about his ability to manipulate the pocket and buy some time in the pocket and not take off and run with the football.
The first I heard about that was we ran a promo with Adam Schefter. I hadn't heard that audio at all of Vic comparing, you said, Teddy Bridgewater to Tom Brady, his pocket presence?
He was saying the best in the business at pocket manipulation, because there's two kinds of quarterbacks, guys who take off and run the ball and guys who can manipulate the pocket. And the best in Vic's mind is Tom Brady. And he saw a little bit of that from Teddy Bridgewater on Saturday night. He was not making a direct comparison. So James and I was trying to bring James back down to earth with that, because that was another thing. He was like, oh my gosh, now Vic Fangio is saying he's Tom Brady. It's like, no, no, no. He saw a little bit of what Tom Brady's the best at. He saw a little bit of that from Teddy Bridgewater on Saturday as far as the pocket manipulation, sliding, moving around, stepping up within the pocket.
Well, he was great at it.
He was fantastic.
On Saturday night. I mean, you see what he was able to do there and keep his eyes down the field, get out of the pocket, avoid the rush, move up in the pocket, and look back to his left and hit the swing pattern. You know, they were trying to take a shot play on one of those plays, and it wasn't open. He moved back up in the pocket and then hit Royce Freeman out in the left flat. I think it was Royce and not Javonte Williams in the left flat. But he was able to manipulate the pocket, move around in the pocket, and still make plays down the football field. And I thought, see, that's where Teddy separates himself in my mind from Drew Locke, is his ability to do those little things. People look at, and like James and a lot of fans, not all the fans, but they look at the 80-yard touchdown to K.J. Hamler, and they're like, oh, my gosh. But they don't realize that, winning football games is about doing the little things. And Teddy just does those little things a little bit more consistent and better than Drew. It's not about the 80-yard touchdown bombs here and there. But you got to have more consistency, and that's what Teddy brings to the table.
Yeah, I think James used the word, and I don't want to turn this first segment into a James Miller-like bass.
That's always fun. Might as well.
But we can certainly do it for at least one here. He used the word excitement and exciting so many times. I was like, you've got to just push that out of your mind. This is a coaching staff that's literally fighting for their jobs. They're not choosing exciting. They're not looking at next year down the road for Drew Locke's development. Vic Fangio's quote to me when I asked him, what is the criteria for deciding this quarterback competition? Who gives us the best chance to win right now? Not week 12, not next year, right now. He wants to find a way to win the Giants game. That is the most important thing on Vic Fangio's mind. So the decision will be based on that. The quarterback decision will be based on who provides him the best chance to win that ball game.
And then that how it should be? I understand sometimes it's not about that, right? Like if you got a Trevor Lawrence, I mean, Minshew might give him a better chance to win week one, week two, but everybody understands the deal there, right? Everybody understands that Trevor Lawrence is the future. You draft him number one overall. He's got to play. But when you look at the Broncos situation, Drew had that opportunity last year. That was his opportunity last year, and he didn't take advantage of it. And now, you want to just roll him back out there again. It had to be much better than what we saw last year, and it just hasn't been that much better. And Teddy's been really, really good, and he's been great in both games. And he's just the type of quarterback that that Vic is looking for when you're looking at just winning games now. Not developing a quarterback. You're looking at winning games now. And then the Broncos situation, that's the way it should be.
I think the hot seat the coaches are on makes it that way. But to your point, yeah, you've had 18 starts if you're Drew Locke. And if you have not developed a firm grasp on it at this point, then it should not be given to you. And while Drew Locke, I think, has improved from last year to this year, I saw better footwork in week one of the preseason. I saw some of the footwork I saw last year from Drew Locke creep into game two once he started getting pressured because the second string offensive line was in. But you have improved, Drew Locke, but unfortunately Teddy Bridgewater is a little bit ahead of you. And it's not so far enough ahead where I'm going to revolt if somehow Drew Locke becomes the guy. I think Drew Locke is better and will help this team win games. But I think, again, Teddy Bridgewater is just that much little bit further ahead.
How do you operate when the pocket's muddied? How do you operate when it's not, when the running game's not working? How do you operate when they start bringing some pressure, right? That none of that happened in game one. It was easy peasy, right?
I mean,
like he's standing back there 5, 6, 7 seconds. Same thing for Teddy, right? Minnesota didn't bring any pressure. They're just playing base coverage. They're playing with their backups. It was like just a dominant peewee team playing against a underclass peewee team. I mean, they just hand the ball to Javonte Williams 12 yards, 11 yards. Oh, now we're going to go with play action. No pressure at all. But this last week was much different. Seattle was bringing heat. They were bringing pressure from all different areas. Now how do you operate when it gets a little bit muddy? And Teddy far exceeded Drew in that category, and that's real football. That's real football. That's what more you're going to see in the regular season than just what we saw against Minnesota. And Teddy was able to handle those things, and that's what the coaches are looking at. How do you handle things when it's not ideal, when it's muddied? Will you, can you find Royce Freeman in the flat and give it to him on time, on the money, accurate, early, and let him go get 12, 13 yards? It doesn't look like much, but all of a sudden, you get it to him at the right time, and he gets 13 yards. Those plays are huge, especially for a team like the Denver Broncos, and Teddy just provides more of that than Drew. And that's just, that's really just the facts. That's the facts.
Now, of course, the Drew Lock fan club, which James Merilatt is the president of, will
president,
say
CEO, CFO, all of that,
founder, yes. President, yes, secretary, yes. The whole shebang about
treasurer.
Yeah, they'll say, well, the Drew Lock scramble and then flip play—that's what Drew Lock brings. It's like, really, you want to cite a off schedule play as to the reason why he should be the quarterback because he can flip it forward in a schoolyard play? I understand that's not Teddy's game, but 75-80% of pass plays are going to be on schedule and on script, where the improvisational skills of Drew Lock aren't going to be as significant as the steady, consistent skills of Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes, you have to operate in the pocket. You know, all those plays are nice. You know, when Patrick Mahomes scrambles right and throws it way back left, and it's like, oh, that's a great play, and it makes the highlight reel, but can you operate in the pocket? And that's what your quarterback has to do. Yeah, it's a great play. Off-schedule plays, that's a part of football, making those plays. But you got to be able to operate in the pockets, hang in there on those fourth down and fives, hang in there on those third down plays. And I loved what I saw from Drew in game one on that third down to Jerry Jeudy, hanging in that pocket, sliding up in the pocket. Unfortunately, we didn't see more of that this past week. And so just the inconsistencies there. And I don't want to make this about bashing. I'd rather bash James Merilatt than bash Drew Lock, because I'm a fan of Drew Lock. I'm a fan of his, and I think he has improved, but just not enough to win this job, especially in the Broncos' circumstances. I think that, you know, it's going to be Teddy. I've thought that the whole time. I haven't wavered from that. I think he's the fit that this coaching staff needs, and he's going out there, and he's had a better training camp. Now, the longer this thing goes on without naming a quarterback, to me, that signals something else is happening here, because it's pretty obvious. You hear Vic talk about Teddy. You know, you mentioned it, the Tom Brady thing, and about his pocket presence. We heard after game one, at halftime of game one, when Drew was great, and Vic mentioned Teddy and how well he was playing also. But the longer this thing goes on, to me, it tells me that something else is at play here. Like there's another voice in Vic's ear. I don't know who it is, but I wouldn't think it's another coach. I would think it's somebody, you know, above Vic, whether it's George or John, or, you know, whoever. I don't know, but it may, that's where my mind goes, because to me it's clear that Vic wants Teddy, and Teddy's the better fit right now for the Broncos. Am I crazy?
You know what? They're back at practice today, so maybe it could be a situation where Vic just wants to have a conversation with the team and then release the news publicly. That could certainly be the case. And I've been involved where, you know, the coaches have delayed the decision-making, or at least the public unveiling of the decision, because they wanted a chance to talk to the team. Let me bring Teddy in my office. Let me bring Drew in my office. Let me talk to those guys. Let me talk and address this to the whole team so we can put this kind of thing to bed so it's not a controversy within the locker room, and then we'll talk about it publicly. So that certainly could be the case. So I'm not – if this was Thursday, then I could maybe get a little bit more credence to where you're coming from. But it's only Tuesday. They're back in
got
the facility.
Time.
They got a little bit of time here. So,
but my point is, the longer it goes, that's where my mind goes.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that right now, but I'm saying the longer this thing drags out here, I'm like, what's going on here? Because you put the clues together, Vic, how Teddy has played, and you look at the Broncos situation. To me, everything signals Teddy. And if they don't go ahead and name it, like, why not name Teddy now? He's done enough to be named the starter. Nobody in that locker room is going to look at you like, oh, what? So the longer it goes on here, now it might come out tomorrow, and that's fine. It might come out later tonight. But if this thing continues to drag on, my antennas go up and say, what's going on here?
Now, when we spoke to Vic on Friday, he said, you know, we're not playing games. We're not trying to confuse the Giants as to who our starting quarterback is going to be. We're not doing that college thing of, oh, my gosh, we don't know which tape to watch kind of thing. So he said, you know, we're really just doing our honest best to evaluate these two guys, give them the most opportunities we possibly can, put them in as many situations as we possibly can, and then let their play tell us what the right way to go is. And I would love to make a decision as soon as possible. But if it can't be made and we have to kick the can down the road for another week, then that's what we'll do. He also mentioned that, of course, the sooner we make a decision, the sooner we can start tailoring the offense, because these guys are two different guys with two different skill sets. So the offense will need to be tailored, not vanilla, for one or the other, depending on who the starter is.
Well, which yes, perfect, right? I mean, you'd rather make this call sooner rather than later. We know what happened with Drew Lock in his first start when he was splitting the reps on a Friday with Brandon Allen, and they were playing, you know, Vic said it, they were playing silly games, which was ridiculous. So from what you're saying, that's not going to be the case this time. Now, it might drag on a little bit, but they're not going to be trying to mess around with the Giants like they were the Chargers a couple years ago. I think that's good. You got to do what's best for your football team. And what's best for the Broncos is to name a quarterback as soon as possible. Have you seen enough? Have you seen enough? If you were the head coach, have you seen enough to just say, this is it. I've seen it. It's time to name my starting quarterback. Or would you say you needed one more week?
I think I have seen enough. Now, I think this is interesting because it's you and I, and obviously I look at life through a defensive lens. And that makes me always want to pick the safer choice. When I was with the Seahawks and we had a young Matt Hasselbeck and we had a Trent Dilfer coming off a Super Bowl victory in Baltimore, the choice was easy for all of us defensive guys because Trent was more steady. He was more consistent. He didn't turn the ball over and didn't make the same mistakes that Matt Hasselbeck did at that stage in his career. So from a defensive perspective, I'm going to choose a guy who has the chance to put us in less bad situations.
Right.
And if we're talking about Matt Hasselbeck and Trent Dilfer, well, I make the comparison to Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock, and Teddy being more Trent Dilfer and Drew Lock being more Matt Hasselbeck. Matt Hasselbeck went on and had a fabulous career, played a long time, led a lot of teams to the playoffs. But at that point, he was still a little bit too turnover prone for my liking. And in the end, I think Mike Holmgren ended up choosing Trent Dilfer because Trent was just steady, more consistent, and less mistake prone. But as an offensive guy, I want to hear your take because, again, for me, I look at it from a defensive perspective.
Sure.
But as an offensive guy, when you're playing receiver, don't you want the guy who's a steady 7 instead of the guy who's a 9 and sometimes a 2?
Absolutely.
And doesn't consistency matter? Of course,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. I want that guy that's more of the proven veteran, the pro, and you don't want to have to go through the growing pains. And not saying Teddy's perfect here. Teddy's not perfect. I mean, Teddy's on his 4th or 15, whatever it is, for a reason, right? He's not a franchise quarterback. But for the Broncos, who gives them the best chance to win this year? And that's Teddy. And offensively, when I look at the Broncos, offensively, they have a lot of talented skill position players. But they also have one thing in common, a lot of youth.
Uh-huh.
Right. When you look at those skill position players, a lot of youth there. They need a grown up. They need a grown up man in the ship, Chad. Right. They don't need another young guy. That's important here. They need that adult there. And that's more Teddy Bridgewater. Just that calming presence, that voice that, you know, guys look up to and respect because it is Teddy Bridgewater. I think that's huge in this situation when you have a lot of youth on your offense. You want the captain of that ship, your quarterback, to be have experience and to be a pro and to been through the fires before. And that's Teddy Bridgewater. So for me, yes, I would rather the more consistent guy. I'd rather the guy that's been around the block a few more times. And I think, especially in the Broncos situation, it's much, much more ideal to have that type of veteran quarterback, man in the ship, than a younger guy with more young guys around him. And it just all signals to me it's got to be Teddy Bridgewater. And the sooner the better here, Vic. I don't know what's the hang up here. Like, you're not going to see anything else, really. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to fall on their face and just kind of show this thing through. But I just go back to, like, what's you got to get this thing going because you got to start fast this year.
I agree with you. And for the third preseason game, the Rams don't play anybody in the preseason anyway. So in here in the third game, you know they're not going to play anybody at all. So the chance to evaluate either of these quarterbacks versus a dynamic defense, first stringers, that's not out there. So unless these guys don't understand the game plan and somehow fall on their face and just simply can't execute what's being called from Pat Shurmur, I'm not sure what else you could glean from here in week three that you haven't already seen in weeks one and weeks two. Before training camp started, before there was any, you know, scorecard to go off of, I was talking about the point that you just made, and that with so many young guys on this offense, the growth of those guys is going to be better the more consistent play you have at the quarterback position. If their play can't be, you know, they can't grow if the quarterback is constantly up and down. And, you know, I know Drew has been more steady this year during training camp, but if you go back to his 18 starts, the guy's never strung together three really good games, much less two good games. So the track record of inconsistency is clear, and it's there. It's apparent. Just look at the stats. Just look at the stat lines. So, again, if you're going to provide a environment that is most conducive to K.J. Hamler and Jerry Jeudy growing, that's going to be consistency. For Noah Fant and for Courtland Sutton to take the next step, that's going to be consistency. For Javonte Williams to seize that job, he's got to be a good pass protector, which he was on that fourth and five when Teddy threw the ball down the field. But he needs to know where the quarterback is going to be in the pocket, not a guy who backs out of the pocket as Drew has done in the past. So all those kinds of things will accelerate the growth of those young guys, mainly because of the consistency factor.
Yeah, and also I think that Drew would benefit from coming off the bench. I think he still needs time to grow, to develop. And we saw him his rookie year coming off the bench late in the season, and he looked great. So I think some time just to take the pressure off of him, be able to sit back, watch Teddy, learn a little bit. And I think most of us agree that it's probably whoever starts is probably not going to start 17 games. Something's going to happen, whether it be poor play, whether it be injury, that we see the other guy. And it happens around the league a lot, where one guy is not the starter for 17 games. I think in this situation, you're going to see both of these guys. And I think Drew's better coming off the bench in relief. Let him take a deep breath, continue to learn, develop, work on the things that he needs to continue to work on, continue to grow in this offense. And I think that's the best situation anyway. And I think Teddy's the better quarterback. I think Teddy, to me, has shown that he has a grasp of this offense. Like, he really, really knows it. When you see these checkdowns, when you see the shot play that wasn't there, Teddy avoids the pressure, moves up in the pocket, keeps his eyes down the field, and all of a sudden he just swings to the left and whips it out there to Royce Freeman. And I think it was Royce. It might have been Javon. And he makes one guy miss, and then they get, you know, 8, 9, 10 yards or whatever. That, to me, is like, man, that's a shot play. Trying to go deep, trying to take a shot there, and you realize that that's not there. I got to get to my check down as quick as possible, and he just swung there to the left on time, on the money. If it wasn't a perfect pass, the running back wouldn't have been able to make the linebacker miss and get 7 or 8 more yards. So just little things like that that Teddy does that I don't see from Drew, to me, that's where the separation is. And, you know, I think guys like us see that, right? But, you know, the fans – James Merrillat, they just look at the 80-yard bomb, right? They look at the 80-yard bomb. But the coaches, they're looking at the little thing. The players in that locker room watching the film, they see all of those things that most people just kind of overlook, and all they see is an 80-yard bomb. And that's what they keep talking about is, oh, he hit the 80-yard bomb. There's more fireworks here with Drew. And there's got to be more substance there. There's got to be more little things done correctly.
I will agree with that. And that may have been Teddy's most impressive play on Saturday night was his back was turned to the back on his left side. He was scanning the field with his back turned, and first 2-3 progressions go away, goes to his check down, flips his feet, gets his feet set to throw a good ball, delivers a good ball, and to your point, on time, where the running back could then make the defender miss. Adam Schefter joined the drive yesterday and hinted strongly that what he thinks about this quarterback competition. We'll get to that after the break.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Welcome Welcome back in. This is the Stokely and Zach Show. We have Stokely, but we have no Zach. I am Chad Brown filling in for Zach By. Brandon and I did the first segment talking about our feelings about Teddy Bridgewater, essentially, and why we feel as if he is in the lead. But, you know, two old football players with our share of head injuries, you know, we're just two opinions here. But let's hear what Adam Schefter had to say yesterday on The Drive.
Yeah, I would be surprised because Vic himself has said that he'd like to do it this week, right? So if he'd like to do it this week, I think he's had his mind made up. I don't think it's just something that all of a sudden flashed. Now, again, I think, you know, Drew played really well at Minnesota. So that gives you something to think about because he flashed and he looked strong. But I think that Teddy is a guy that hasn't made very many mistakes with the football. And the Broncos have not won a game in September under Vic Fangio, I believe. And so if they're going to play good defense and try to run the football well, they're going to want a quarterback that doesn't make mistakes.
I mean, there you go, right?
Right.
I mean, that all signals Teddy. And, you know, if Vic has wanted Teddy all along, and which I could see that scenario where Vic has leaned more towards Teddy, and he's kind of told us that without telling us that, then when Teddy goes out and does what he does in both preseason games, right, follows up Drew in the first one and plays really well, and then just crushes it the other night against Seattle. When you do that, then you got everything that you need to make him the starter. You know, the guys in the locker room aren't going to look at you like, what? You know, because that guy has actually gone out there and earned it. He has earned it. So, you know, if Vic wanted him, it's very easy for him to sell it to, I think, the team and to Broncos country.
All right, Stoke. The text line is accusing you and I of being Teddy fanboys. During my call on Saturday nights, someone on Twitter accused me of hanging from a certain body part of Teddy Bridgewater.
No, they did.
Yes,
they did. Oh, my goodness.
And at that point,
how dare they?
And at that point, I found it pretty interesting because Drew hadn't even played. I'm simply telling you what Teddy is doing on the field. I you know, when I'm behind this microphone, it's a little bit more of opinion and take oriented. But when I'm calling a game, I'm telling you what's happening on the field. So how can you accuse me of hanging from Teddy's you-know-whats when I'm just telling you what he's doing on the field?
It's not your opinion. It's a fact of what you're watching.
The game is going on.
If he plays well.
Right.
If he plays well, what do you want to not give him credit for playing well?
So clearly there's some folks who are not, maybe not James Merrillat, maybe not the president of the Drew Lock Fan Club, but they are offended by our conversation about Teddy Bridgewater and us saying nice things about him. So let's
see a lot of that. You do.
Yeah.
You see, I mean, I think that if you looked at Broncos country right now, it's probably 75-25. Like, they want Drew Lock. Would you agree with that? I mean, you've been, you know, obviously you did the game. You've been filling in a lot. You've been, you know, so you're here in town. Like, what is your vibe on Twitter? Like, what is your vibe? My vibe is like 75-80% want Drew Lock.
Well, you know, I don't want to just dismiss the fans, but there are five guys who have played professional football on this station. Four of you guys played for the Broncos. I'm the only one who didn't play for the Broncos. And I think to a man, we are all seeing Teddy in the lead. And as I have said, and you said earlier during the show, I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm not part of a fan club. I'm just calling it from a pure football perspective, how I look and how I view the game of football. Now, my lens is always going to be a defensive lens, play linebacker. That's how I look and, you know, focus on the game. But you're an offensive guy, played receiver. Your livelihood was dependent upon who was playing the quarterback. So it's not as if it's just one side. We're getting both sides on one show, and both guys, you and I, are seeing this in a very similar way. But let's find a way. So when I was in Seattle doing my internship with Pete Carroll, and we would do the personnel meetings with the personnel staff, the GM, and the coaches, Pete would say before every personnel meeting, find something positive to say about these guys before we get into their negatives. So this doesn't end up being a two-hour bash session of a meeting. So let's talk about Drew Lock and where he's improved. Let's throw some of these Drew Lock fans some red meat.
Okay, I like this,
and meet
Jack.
And meet them where they're at, because Drew has certainly improved. And I think they are taking our praise in for Teddy Bridgewater as somehow that Drew Lock sucks. It is true that both guys can be playing well. It is true that Drew Lock has improved. So give me your Drew Lock improvement story before we start talking about Teddy again.
Well, I think his calmness, his demeanor, his pocket presence is better. And we saw that to the play on the play to Jerry Jeudy that first game. That was a play that really stood out to me was, you know, he climbed the pocket and he just hung in there, went through his progression, got to Jeudy, who was, I think, his third read on that play and found him and ended up being a huge game. And I think Drew Lock last year, after going through his first and second one, would have felt panicked, felt pressure, even if it wasn't there, and try to escape the pocket. So, like, you see him calming down. You see him going through progressions better. Better footwork. It's not all perfect yet, but I think he put a ton of work in, and you see better results this year. He's a better quarterback than what he was last year. So I think his pocket presence is better. He hangs in there longer. He's able to go through his reads better this year. So I think all of those things, and we haven't seen the big mistake. We haven't seen the turnover. Now, he hadn't played a ton, but we haven't seen it. So don't make a bad play worse, you know, and we saw a couple plays where he could have done that against Seattle. You know, you get the free blitzer, guy coming up the middle. You know, last year I think Drew probably would have just thrown it up for grabs. He didn't. So look, there's a lot of improvements from Drew Lock from last year to this year. So I'm not saying that Drew Lock can't be an NFL quarterback. I'm not saying that at all. I think he still has a chance. Now he's got to, take a big step forward to be able to, you know, be an NFL starting quarterback in this league and continue to improve. And I think he can. I think he's learned what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, and he put a lot of work in this offseason. And if he continues to do it, I still think he can do it. But he's got to, you know, I don't think he's the best fit for the Broncos this year.
I think Drew Lock will be a NFL quarterback at some point. I don't think this is the end of Drew Lock's football journey. But again, with the criteria that Vic Fangio is using, who gives us the best chance to win right now? You know, I think there's, you know, again, there's five pros on the station and all five of us are leaning towards Teddy in this. But Drew, to follow up on your thoughts, certainly has improved. That throw to Salbert in the corner of the field there late in the first half, that was a fantastic throw. Earlier, I think later in that drive, he threw the ball out of bounds because, you know, there was no place to go with the football. The self-sacks that he took and not trying to do something risky with the football, those are all signs of maturity. And there was a couple of checkdowns that he had to take, scan the field, went through his progressions, rather than trying to force the ball down the field, went to his checkdown. That's all growth and maturity. Even though I thought his footwork took a step back from week one to week two, both weeks were definitely better than what we saw last year. So there is certainly improvement. And again, if Drew Lock is named the starter, I'm not going to, you know, go over there and, you know, to the UC Health Center and burn the building down in protest. I could say, okay, I disagree, but I see where you guys saw enough improvement while you're making this choice. But in the end, regardless of Drew Lock's improvement, your improvement as a team or as a player is never in a vacuum. It's always going to be against your competition. And in this case, there is a direct competition. And that guy just happens to play really well and has been incredibly consistent all training camp. And for me, again, it's always going to be that consistency factor that leads, particularly at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and look, if it's Drew, it's Drew. Let's go. I hope he plays really well. Hope the Broncos win a lot of football games. That's where I'm at. I would be really confused. I would be really, really confused, Chad, if it is Drew. I can't get my mind to go there to see how this coaching staff would overlook what Teddy has done and their needs and what they're trying to accomplish this year and overlook that veteran quarterback that has played really well this training camp and go with the younger guy. I just can't get my brain to go there. I felt the same way before camp, and then once camp started, And even after the Minnesota week, if Teddy came in and did what Teddy had to do and was that veteran quarterback, he was going to win this job. Unless Drew was just lights out. And Drew hadn't been lights out, and Teddy has come in there and played really well. So I just can't get my brain to go to them naming Drew Lock. But if they do, okay, let's rock and roll.
All right, with that decision looming, I certainly want to get back to more quarterback talk as the show goes along. But coming up next, the athletic directors for the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 had a meeting. We'll talk about that after the break.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Well, Stoke, the text line is lighting up after our Teddy Drew conversation. This is the Stokely and Zach Show. I'm Chad Brown sitting in with Brandon Stokely. But before we dive back into the quarterback competition, controversy, whatever you want to call it, today there was a meeting between the athletic directors for the ACC, the Pac-12, and the Big Ten, talking about forming an alliance. There was no agreement, no paperwork signed, other than just a general sense of we need to come together to be able to best deal with the changes and evolving landscape of college football. I've had some conversations on air, Stoke, about my view of 5 years, 10 years down the road, perhaps there being one major super conference. But this alliance here, which leaves out the Big 12, seems to be kind of a shot at fighting the SEC, which is now trying to get Texas and Oklahoma from the Big 12. So what's your take on this news, Stoke?
Well, you gotta fight back. I mean, you can't just watch the SEC just pick apart, you know, certain conferences and pluck the best teams, and then you look up in a couple years and you got nothing left. So you gotta think ahead here. And I like what these conferences are doing. I'm kind of surprised that the who's not a part of it?
The Big 12.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the Big 12 isn't a part of this also. I don't know what's going on there. But you got the ACC, Big 10, and Pac-12 that are looking to join together. But I think it's smart. I think it's a smart thing to do, especially in today's landscape when you see what's happening with the SEC. SEC's the big brother to begin with here. You know, they're the top dog in college football. And if they keep adding and you don't do anything, these other conferences, it's going to be SEC and everybody else. So I like it. How about you?
I do as well. The Pac-12 apparently was the driver behind this conversation and them forming an alliance. And I think the Pac-12 is looking out for themselves. You know, the West Coast football and the college football scene is usually an afterthought. I mean, USC's got a big national brand, and they may, you know, be a pretty good team this year. But outside of really Oregon and Washington, not many teams from the West Coast have been part of the national or even playoff picture. So for the Pac-12 to keep itself relevant, number one, you've got to, you know, schedule some games against those other conferences so people can see you across the country and you don't get left behind and you can remain part of the, you know, college football landscape. But I thought there would be one super conference 5-10 years from now. This has the makings now of maybe a two super conference college football landscape, with the SEC being one and these others coming together and maybe the only taking the best teams of the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 and putting those into another super conference, and those two super conferences having their own playoff kind of thing. College football 10 years from now won't resemble the college football that you and I grew up in. The NIL.
Do you like
stuff.
That?
Part of it makes me sad, but part of it recognizes that there's just simply too much money for the landscape not to change. Vanderbilt really has no reason other than the money why they're still in the SEC, and the money that they get, they don't add anything competitive on the football field to the SEC. So why wouldn't the SEC kick them out and take Oklahoma or Texas in? It's just those kind of things just make sense. For, you know, my school, CU. CU doesn't have the revenue to compete with Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State and Oklahoma. They just simply don't. And as much as I look at life through black and gold glasses, and I think the Buffs, you know, and pray for them to be, you know, a football power again, the college football landscape has changed so significantly and the money has become so big, I don't know how you do it. Alabama hires former pro coaches to come in and just be analysts and pays them $250,000 a year.
Crazy.
They don't even coach the players. They're just analysts to watch tape and formulate game plans. How does CSU compete with that? And we saw when CSU has played Alabama in the last couple of years, they haven't been able to compete with that. So why would Alabama be on the same schedule with a team like CSU? Let's put CSU in, you know, conference B or C where they can play teams that are competitive to them. When they have a chance of winning a championship with that level of team based on maybe less of geography, but more based on revenue.
Was that some CSU bashing there a little bit under the table, a little like kick?
No. I'm a fan of Colorado football. I'm a fan of CSU until they play the Buffs. But it's just simply the lay of the land.
Right. It is. It's crazy the way things are going. I hate it, man. I like the way it was, of course. I'm a little bit old school, I guess. So I hate it, but I just don't want it to kind of just disappear here. I don't know what this future's looking like in 10 years. But it looks like, you know, it's gonna be some kind of super conferences, that are gonna be put together and we'll see. But I mean, it would be cool to see CU play Clemson, CU play Miami, or CU play Ohio State. Like, games like that would be really cool. I mean, that gets me interested. Something a little bit different, unique. Obviously, the landscape of college football with the money coming in, it was getting absolutely absurd. Something was gonna happen. It finally did. And it's like, okay, let's see. Hopefully it turns out to be a good thing here. But some of those games get me excited. I mean, does that, you know, for you, Chad, I mean, you know, with being a CU guy, I mean, does that, you know, CU playing Ohio State or Penn State and some of those teams, is that cool to you?
It is, as long as the playing field is even. You know, the Pac-12 and CU in some ways are, you know, far behind financially these other programs. You know, Nick Saban, you know, not a dumb guy, pointed out a couple of weeks ago in the press conference before camp started in Alabama that his quarterback has a chance to make $1 million due to all this NIL stuff. You don't think that's a recruiting tool? You don't think that's going to create an even stronger Alabama?
That's why he said it.
Right. That's why it's a
recruiting. He's not dumb.
Right. That's why he said. So CU and the Boulder community can't
but it's
offer.
Not going to be fair. It's never going to be fair in college sports. It's not going to. I mean, CU will never be on the same playing field as Ohio State when it comes to certain things, when it comes to boosters, when it comes to money coming into the program. It just won't be.
So is it? So then should there not be a super conference that is made of these top revenue teams? Not necessarily revenue that where the players get paid through the NIL, but these programs that bring in $200 million between ticket sales and TV rights and all that various stuff, those programs are at the top. They have 10 or 12 analysts. They've got, you know, $100 million football facilities. You know, all those pieces that come with that money are in place that set those programs further ahead. They hire the top nutritionists. They hire the top chefs. They hire the top trainers. The list goes on and on. These other schools just simply can't compete. And at some point, you see what happens when some of these teams, when New Mexico State goes and plays a money game.
I've been a part of those, Chad. I've been on that side of it, the New Mexico State side.
There's 8 or 10 or 12 guys who can't even play for the next couple of weeks because the kids get beat up.
Yep.
The program takes that money game to, you know, do some things financially within the program, but it doesn't help the team competitively. It doesn't help the players on the field. We played Ohio State and I got hurt. That's my story to my grandkids. I don't think that's a story you want these kids to tell. I'd rather them say, hey, you know what? We were in Conference C. We competed every year and we were in the Conference C playoffs every year. I wasn't part of that Conference A
right.
stuff.
I liked it. I mean, where would you put? I mean, I think that CU could be in Conference A. I mean, how many teams would be in Conference A? I don't know. Maybe they're Conference B. You tell me. You know more about it than I do. But, like, if there's different levels, you know, you have a certain level A, like you said. I mean, that might be the Bamas and the Ohio States and those types of programs. And maybe CU is in the B group. I don't know. What do you think?
I think there's movement between the A, B, C, D groups, depending. If you're, you know, a great tier or Conference B team, you have a chance to replace the worst team in Conference A as you get better in your program.
Relegation. Yes. Chad, that's what they do in soccer.
There we go.
I see you.
Something like that. So you dominate.
Get relegated.
You dominate Conference B.
Okay.
You slide up. And now let's see what you got with the big boys.
I like that. I hadn't thought about that.
And if you're the bottom team in Conference A and it's 20 teams, then yeah, you get kicked out and you get replaced by a team from Conference B. But that's how I kind of see this college football evolving as things go along. Because again, it's just not fair to expect some of these lower, you know, revenue teams, even within the Pac-12. Oregon State generally just has no shot from a revenue standpoint. Stadium small, not a lot of money within the program, can't hire top coaches, can't get private planes for recruiting trips and all that kind of stuff. They really don't have a shot of winning the Pac-12 North ever. So therefore, let's get them out of there. Let's get someone else in there who has a legitimate shot of competing year in and year out. Okay, coming up next.
Hopefully there's not many Oregon State fans around here.
I know. Well, I've already bashed Oregon State and CSU in one segment.
You're on a roll here, man.
The text line's really going to light up now.
303-713-1043. Give it to Chad Brown.
Yeah, me and Stoke would come back after this little short time away with our Vic Fangio and Pat Shermer. Are they pulling in the same direction regards this quarterback competition?
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.